on the Australian Colonial Frontier Battles Convincing Ground was published in 2009, I was inundated with more than 200 letters and emails, many of them from fourth-generation farmers and Aboriginal people. Farmers sent me their great-grandparents' letters and documents about the Frontier War, and Aboriginal people sent new information on many of those same battles. I already had a pile of information collected from research conducted too late to make it into Convincing Ground, and after following the leads from correspondence, I discovered much more. I began to see a consistent thread running through the material. Not only that the Frontier War had been misrepresented in what we'd been taught in school, but also that the economy and culture of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people had been grossly undervalued. I knew that if I were to use all the new material in another book, I would have to begin from the source upon which Australia's idea of its history is based, the journals and diaries of explorers and colonists. These journals revealed a much more complicated Aboriginal economy than the primitive hunter-gatherer lifestyle we had been told was the simple lot of Australia's first people. Hunter-gatherer societies forage and hunt for food and do not employ agricultural methods or build permanent dwellings. They are nomadic. But as I read those early journals, I came across repeated references to people building dams and wells, planting, irrigating and harvesting seed, preserving the surplus and storing it in houses, sheds, or secure vessels, creating elaborate cemeteries, and manipulating the landscape, none of which fitted the definition of hunter-gatherer. Could it be that the accepted view of Indigenous Australians simply wandering from plant to plant, kangaroo to kangaroo in hapless opportunism, was incorrect? It is exciting to revisit the words of the first Europeans to witness the pre-colonial Aboriginal economy. In Dark Emu, my aim is to give rise to the possibility of an alternative view of pre-colonial Aboriginal society. In reviewing the industry and ingenuity applied to food production over millennia, we have a chance to catch a glimpse of Australia as Aboriginals saw it. Many readers of the Explorers' Journals see the hardships they endured and are enthralled by the finds of grassy plains, bountiful rivers, and sites where great towns could be built. But by adjusting our perspective by only a few degrees, we see a vastly different world from the same window. The first colonists had their minds wrought by ideas of race and destiny, by the rumours heard as a child of the great British Empire. They were immersed in these stories as infants, and later, while marching into school to Men of Harlech, standing to attention for God Save the King, and poring breathlessly over the stories of Horatio Nelson, the Christian Crusaders, King Arthur, Oliver Cromwell, and of course, Captain James Cook. Europe was convinced that its superiority in science, economy, and religion directed its destiny. In particular, the British considered their successes in industry accorded their colonial ambition a natural authority, that it was their duty to spread their version of civilization and the word of God to heathens. In return, they would capture the wealth of the colonized lands. Charles Darwin's theory of evolution was still to come, but the basis of it, the gradual ascent from beast to civilized man, dominated the psychology of Europe at the time. The first British visitors sailed to Australia contemplating what they were about to find, and innate superiority was the prism through which their new world was seen. When Darwin's theory was put forward, it gave comfort to those who believed it was their right and duty to occupy the empty land. As anthropologist Tony Barter commented, "The basis of that view was historical. It held that the advance of civilization was a triumphal progress, morally justifiable and probably inevitable.